Welcome to another exciting episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. My name is Matt Baum, and I am your host. And today, we are going to take a break from listening to me. You've got to be getting sick of it by now, and I totally understand. I'm going to hand the reins over to editor-in-chief of ministryofhemp.com, Kit O'Connell, who became our man-on-the-street reporter at the recent Hemp Industries Association conference in Charlottesville, North Carolina. Just like it sounds, this is a show for hemp professionals, for people that are in the industry and people that are looking to get into the hemp industry. Kit met a lot of cool people and talked to a lot of cool people, one of which is Joy Becker, the president of the Hemp Industries Association. She also works in the industry as a partner in a hemp food and manufacturing, co-packing, and hemp goods distribution company based out of New York State. Joy is incredible, and I'm super excited for you to hear this conversation. So let's get right into it. So Kit, welcome back to the show. You were just at the Hemp Industries Association Conference.
Yeah.
This was in Charlotte. It's a little warmer there than in Nebraska right now. So.
Yeah, although it was a little colder than Austin where I usually am. So kind of in between.
You poor
thing. It was nice though. I hadn't been to Charlotte before, but I enjoyed it. The Hemp Industries Association Conference is one that moves around. So last year it was in Los Angeles, and this year they were in Charlotte. And you know, Charlotte really has a really vibrant, or North Carolina in general has a really vibrant hemp industry. So that was really great to see.
So tell me about the conference itself. This is mainly industrial hemp that we're dealing with. Is that right?
Yeah. And I mean, compared to that, because we went to the NoCo Hemp Expo, you know, earlier this year together. And, you know, this is much more has the feel of just industry insiders, okay. I think is the biggest difference. You know, there was some aspects that were open to the public for one day, but you know, a lot of the talks and just the overall feel of it is just for people really within the hemp industry. You know, the Hemp Industries Association has been around since 94. So it was interesting. I felt like I got a real sense of history of the industry this year, just seeing how much things have changed. I got talking to some people who, I won't name them, but they're some of the earliest members. And they were talking about how, you know, when this organization got started, it really came together as a way to help really early entrepreneurs in the hemp industry, the earliest entrepreneurs in the U.S., you know, of the modern hemp era, who were importing hemp from China to make like fabric, like clothing, especially, or some hemp foods. And this was even before Canada had legalized hemp, which was a few years later. So it was just kind of a way to bring people together so they'd have more purchasing power and more influence over what they imported from China, and you know, more financial clout to try to get this kind of controversial material through customs.
Right.
You know, flash forward, you know, so much time later, and now we have this booming industry that's probably going to, you know, CBD sales are probably going to exceed 1 billion in 2019.
God, that's insanity. That is completely insane. Was that the major thing that was there, CBD? I mean, like when we were at NoCo, it seemed like that was pretty much the largest presence there.
Absolutely. You know, it was some CBD brands, and a lot of the conversation was about CBD, but there was also a lot of talk just about the actual hemp farming. And there was a couple people doing, you know, seed and oil, and there was one booth, this company out of North Carolina that I want to shout out because they're a smaller company called The Hempville, and they are starting to help North Carolina farmers sell their fiber and hemp herd and the stuff that you need to make like the plastics or hempcrete. So they're trying to create a market for those, you know, farmers kind of starting out with those other types of hemp. But just like the industry as a whole, you know, CBD really dominates it. It was CBD brands,
right?
Or it was, you know, companies supporting CBD brands, like different ways to test your hemp for the cannabinoid content and that kind of thing. And of course, a lot of the conversations were about CBD, although the USDA was a big topic, which I think we'll get to in a minute.
Oh, here. We'll get to that. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So real quick, I'm looking through your pictures that you put on your Twitter moment, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. You said the word hemp herd when you were talking about Hempville. You said the word hemp herd. Hempville. What is herd? I don't know that one. H-U-R-D.
H-U-R-D. It's another word for the core of the hemp plant. So okay. The hemp plant has stringy fibers in it, but it also has this woody core And the most common use for that right now is we chop it up into sort of wood chips, like you'll see in the pictures.
Yeah, there's like a big bag of it.
Yeah, there's a big bag of it, the hempville. And that it can be mixed with lime to make hempcrete, which of course is a powerful, very healthy way to insulate your home. It's incredibly efficient and sustainable as a way to insulate your home. So that's one of the major uses. And you're also seeing the picture, they have it chopped up into very fine, almost like dust.
Yeah.
And that's for using in these kind of composite plastics that are made out of hemp.
That is very cool.
And I see yeah, it was really neat.
You stopped by U Plus CBD after that. They're buddies of ours on one of our
favorite
brands.
Oh, yeah, we love them.
They have a new roll-on. That's not a deodorant, I assume. It's just like a roll.
No.
Okay.
We've been joking about the deodorant since we found that there is a CBD deodorant out there.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
yeah, it exists.
You can get your CBD and not stink. That's great.
Yeah, I don't know how great it is. It's a little bit silly, but that's out there. It exists. Somebody in our team spotted it at TJ Maxx, of all places.
Oh, of course. Well, that's where you go for your hemp needs, right? TJ Maxx.
Right. No, of course not. You know, that's what
of course not. Yeah. So what was the big talk at this conference? I mean, every conference you go to, like everybody's pretty much, they're all there to celebrate things, but everybody has one thing on their mind. What was the big stink at this one?
Well, the big one was the USDA for the most part. So just like in the days before the conference, like in very late October, the USDA released these interim hemp growing guidelines. And so as we've talked about before, of course, the Farm Bill legalized hemp, but then it kicked the ball over to the FDA and the USDA, the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Agriculture, of course, is going to set hemp growing guidelines. And then eventually the FDA is going to set some guidelines for CBD. But that part, the FDA might not happen for quite a while. We really don't know.
Oh, boy.
But the USDA just brought out these guidelines. And they, you know, we're still, the whole industry is really still digesting them. So I want to sort of preempt this by saying that this is my preliminary high level impressions.
Okay.
I know you and I are both going to get more expert opinions as we dig into this, because this is going to be really important. And I think we're going to see pushback against these regulations, whether that's in just trying to lobby to see them be changed, or eventually it might even come to legal action.
Right.
If we can.
We should preface this by saying we're not lawyers. We always say we're not doctors, but let's take a moment here to say we're not lawyers too.
And this is what I took away from listening to people who are lawyers or otherwise industry experts, but that obviously is, you know, not firsthand at this point. So just at like a broad level, there's a real fear that this, you know, there was a lot of hope that the Farm Bill had taken the Drug Enforcement Agency out of involvement in hemp growing. And it did force the DEA to take hemp or CBD off of the schedule of drugs. But these new guidelines, Frank Robeson, who you had on the show recently, he did like a word search.
Yeah, he's great. And I'm hoping I'm going to have him on there to talk about this next episode. So.
And he gave a great presentation on this, and he was spitting mad. Let's say that he was very upset. And I'm sure you can imagine that he's a passionate guy about these topics.
Oh yeah.
So these interim guidelines, and by interim, that means that they're supposed to last for about the next 2 years. And there's also like a transition period where states can kind of choose temporarily to go with their old guidelines or sort of transition into newer ones in compliance with this. And anyway, though, that these guidelines mention the DEA 42 times.
Ugh.
And there's a lot of record keeping and a lot of information that has to be shared with the DEA that is not necessarily necessary. So we're still, you know, the high level view, very high level, is that we're still treating this like a drug,
right?
Not a crop.
Of course.
And the other big disappointment is it really basically almost doesn't mention banking at all. And that's such a major issue, as we've also talked about. I know you've had on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. At length.
It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Now,
so we were really hoping that these guidelines would kind of straighten some of that out, but they haven't, right? Well, it doesn't look like they do.
It seems like there was just like some major headway on the banking front, too. And now to hear that the DEA is still involved, and It's just so mind-numbingly bizarre. But that is something we will talk about on our next episode, I'm sure, when we have Frank on to cut through the tape. What was like the what was the best thing you saw at this show? Wait, let's talk about something positive, because I'm going to beat my head against the desk if we talk about this much more.
You know, what was the best thing I saw at the show? You know, as usual, one of the best things was just the real passion around CBD, you know, and hemp in general. Just so many people who are just really excited about this industry and really want, you know, people to be better through it, you know, for hemp to make the world better. And I think, you know, there is this challenge of these new guidelines, but there's also a feeling that like, we're going to push back against it. We're going to make things healthier. And, you know, there was a lot of talk. I think one of the bigger things that I appreciate is I feel like there is more awareness of the need for regenerative agriculture and a real
definitely a
consciousness in how we're growing hemp. I got to talk to Joy Beckerman, who's the president of the Hemp Industries Association, and she's been a hemp advocate for like 25 years. She's an incredible woman, and that was one of the highlights for me, was getting to sit down and talk to her for so long. And we are looking at all these challenges, but I think there is this understanding that if we can really educate the public about hemp and what it's really possible, what it's possible it can do, and what, you know, what good CBD looks like, we can build something that's sustainable. And I think that's kind of, there was a real positive, like, you know, we're going to get through this as an industry.
Right. Step one, get the government out of the way. But first, we got to show them we can do it the right way.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I think that's a real good thing to emphasize, and that a lot of people came away with that feeling, if we can do it the right way, we can get the government off our backs. And another thing I think is there was a lot of talk about the realities of hemp growing. You know, we've had a year now of legal hemp growing under the Farm Bill, you know, even if all the bells and whistles and the things aren't in place yet completely. But we've had this kind of historic year. We've definitely had more people growing hemp than before this year. And so we're kind of rediscovering the best ways to do it, and also kind of coming to terms with the reality of it, that we do need to make sure we're investing these regenerative practices, and that, you know, we always used to talk about how you can throw hemp on any part of your land and you don't have to water, you don't have to do anything to it.
It's a weed, right?
It's a weed. Yeah. And it's, sure, you can do that, but that's not a very useful plant. And so we are, you know, really coming to terms with the useful and real ways of growing this plant.
What's North Carolina like down there as far as agriculture goes? How friendly are they to this crop?
It's very, very friendly. People are really excited to be growing it there and to be doing, you know, things locally in North Carolina, you know, to create hemp that's grown locally and processed locally. You know, people like the hemp fill are working with the other types of hemp. But we ran into a lot of people that were growing, you know, smokable hemp flower there. And they had some great products. You know, that's kind of a newer product that people are getting into more and more. But that was a really popular thing, and there were a lot of North Carolinians there that were excited to be growing, you know, beautiful, delicious, relaxing, smokable hemp. And now, again, I don't want to be a downer here, but there is a possibility that the governor is considering a law that would ban smokable hemp.
Of course.
But yeah. there was also a feeling that might, because of the Farm Act and the way it's supposed to protect commerce, that there's probably some good grounds to protect all these people that are growing these great, you know, forms of smokable hemp that should be legal under the Farm Bill, because it really is pretty explicit that, you know, any form of hemp is legal now. To possess and consume, at least.
So it seems like, and just looking at all the people you talk to and everybody that was here as far as the hemp industry, they know that this is going to open up. It's just a matter of time. And there's still a few people clinging to some old and fairly uneducated ideas of what this is. But the money is here. The farmers are trying to do it the right way. And eventually, we're going to win, right? Do you feel good about that? Can we say that?
I do. I think we can. You know, we've come, again, we're talking about this industry started in 1994, and I'm sure a lot of those people would not have believed we've come as far as we have.
No doubt.
You know, now. So, you know, it's an exciting time and it's a challenging time. But yeah, I think we are going to win. People do feel like, you know, there was this moment of celebration, understandably, and we deserved it, when the Farm Bill got passed. And, you know, even then we acknowledged that there were flaws in it. But I think we should have recognized that, you know, the DEA was not going to keep their finger out of the pie as easily as we want them to.
Even if Mitch McConnell is on the side of this, they're not going to, you know.
Exactly. But that is the sign, you know, that's the big change. We got to remember that like, yeah, the DEA is still going to throw up all the roadblocks that they can. But now we have people like Mitch McConnell on our side.
Right, which is bizarre to even say out loud, but
it is.
Here we are.
It sounds weird every time I say it, even though I've said it several times now out loud. But Mitch McConnell's on our side. We have all kinds of people on our side. And we're going to get there. And, you know, even with the FDA, which is kind of this mysterious cloud over the industry, especially with CBD, there's definitely a feeling that we're going to get there too. You know, that it's really clear that Congress wants us to have a pathway to regulating but not banning CBD. And that's, you know, what the industry wants too, is to regulate it in the right ways.
They're begging to be regulated. I mean, unlike other industries, they are begging to be regulated. It's crazy. So
we want the CBD hummus and the CBD deodorant off the market.
That's right, man.
They're really positive products that really are going to help people live better lives. You know, one of the questions we get a lot from people is, how do I get into this industry? And, you know, the best thing you can do is to find a hemp show near you, whether it's, you know, going to a big one like this or a really big one like the NoCo Expo, or just there's all kinds of regional ones now popping up in almost every state, and go to that and get talking, just meet people and start networking and see where you fit in. And,
and grab every business card you can, because, I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people are here trying to get people into the industry. I mean, these farmers that grew hemp legally for the first time this year, and they desperately need processors and whatnot that just aren't out there yet. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of growing happening, so there's a lot of room to get in. Exactly.
Like we were just saying, if you are thinking about getting into the industry, or you're even just curious about the hemp industry, there are hemp shows popping up everywhere, and you should absolutely go. You won't believe what is going on in this industry. But that is enough about hemp shows for now. It is time for Kit's discussion with Joy Becker, president of the Hemp Industries Association. Keep in mind, this is part of a much larger conversation that they had, and we're going to kind of jump right into Kit posing a very important question about what we're going to do to ensure that hemp is not only grown the right way, but it's not just taken over by major farming corporations.
So as far as like farmers go, like, I mean, obviously there's going to be these big players coming in, but what can we do to make sure that there is still a place for small producers, for small farmers to get in? Because that's one of the things that's so cool about this is the potential for everybody. We don't want this to just become like two giant corporate growers, right?
Absolutely. I think that there will be, and I know that a lot of these farmers have these ideas of being vertically integrated. So they want to grow an acre or 2 acres, and they want to be the extractor, and they want to have this artisanal, small batch, handcrafted. And there is a model for that.
Oh, yeah.
I also think that if for farmers who don't want to be vertically integrated and also do the processing and the marketing and the selling and the branding, that there are going to be larger brands that are specifically looking for that beautifully grown, organic, ultimately regenerative ag, so that those farmers that enjoy farming with those techniques, and we want there to be more and more, have a market for their hemp as well. But that's going to boil down to consumer education. So I'm also the regulatory officer and industry liaison for Elixinol.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly doing these, you know, what the consumer needs to know about quality and safety before they
for
buy.
For sure. And a lot of what we do too,
And so one of the first things that I put out there is, hemp is a phytoremediating plant.
Yes, yes.
You need to be, as you make these decisions with this broad array of CBD products, here are the questions. What farming practices were used? What soil was used? Hemp is a phytoremediating plant. It can uptake heavy metals and contaminants. Is that what we want for human consumption? So educating the consumer then causes the consumer to ask the question and then demand the higher product. So it's this shared responsibility that always boils down to education, you know? And so we need to make sure that the consumers know it matters and it's a definite thing, and to demand those kinds of products. And may the may the producers of products that are grown with the best possible practices in the greatest soil prevail and win. There will be the, you know, Walmarts of the world out there.
And there's going to be obviously winners and losers. We can't avoid that.
Yes. So as everything, you know, we're also working in tandem with the raising of consciousness on the planet. So while the hemp revolution is happening, so is the regenerative agricultural revolution. So is the self-care revolution. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and so with all of that education going on, it's a consciousness, permaculture consciousness, you know?
Yes, yes.
And so we all are all of those movements and all of those fractalicious, universal, metaphysical points are working together so that hopefully we will, Big Ag is not gonna take this. Big box store is not gonna take this because people are gonna start to take more and more control of their what they put into their bodies.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully there's going to be like a farmer's market equivalent for it. You know, there's going to be that level
yes.
too, you know?
Yeah,
yes. Yeah. Well, let's, if you want, let's jump into CBD. That's the big topic
yes.
too. What do you see the market looking like over the next couple of years? Obviously, from my perspective, there's some stuff that is just pure hype, you know?
Oh, yeah.
My boss found CBD deodorant at TJ Maxx the other day, and it's like,
are yeah. you kidding
no,
me?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, really? Like, that's not...
CBD.
I can't think of an argument for that, you know?
I am trying to figure out...
I love CBD and all these things. I love it to soothe my skin or whatever. And mm-hmm. I guess your armpit gets irritated sometimes, but it seems like a stretch, right?
You know, if there was something wrong with my armpit, I would put Solve
on
the armpit.
Right, I've already got the product for that.
Yeah. So, but I generally have no problems with my armpit.
Or there was the one, too. There was one that went viral on Twitter that was somebody found a hummus that had CBD in it, and the entire, like, regular size container of hummus had 25 milligrams total of CBD in it.
So you'd have to eat the
whole container
thing
to get any of it.
And I, by the way, consume 145 milligrams of CBD a day.
Yeah, I'd probably take about that much, too.
I can't eat that much hummus.
No. So obviously some of those products are going to fade away.
Yes.
You know.
No, there are people, cash grab, low hanging fruit, cash grab. Did I mention cash grab? So that's definitely a huge part of it. You know, again, educating the consumer is a major need and goal here.
Yeah, because like one of my fears is that I don't want the consumer to come away thinking that it's all hype because we know there's so much
that's
benefit.
That's right. So it is, and we're, and I'm trying not to operate out of a place of fear. I put my blinders on as I've been doing for all of these decades, and I'm watching. Hey, watching it all move forward. Yeah, we'll see. You know, if I were a betting woman, and let's talk about the E1 tech of the FDA for a
second.
Of course,
yeah, that's definitely something we want to touch on.
Yeah, so they. The FDA is not moved by strong opinions, strong feelings, videos of children suffering from hellacious, seizures.
That's what worked for the Congress people, but not for the FDA.
The FDA wants data and scientific research. And on the one hand, well, yay, when considering what they are responsible for. And there is a growing body of it. In fact, we have quite a bit right now, but apparently not enough for them, according to them. And it also takes millions of dollars. I think the numbers we were hearing from the FDA between $16 and $20 million to create a regulatory program framework. Here's the thing. Most of us put in comments, whether it was the Hemp Industries Association or many of the CBD leaders or the U.S. Hemp Roundtable, that, you know, the existing CFRs for dietary supplements and food are really great. They just need to be augmented to include, to account for cannabinoids, purity, potency, and warnings. That's really the only pieces that need to be supplemented, and it's probably an overstatement to say they're really great. Let's just say they're sufficient, because there's some onerous stuff there that is completely
not great.
But they're sufficient and just need to be augmented, supplemented. So, number one, they say it's going to take 3 to 5 years, and I don't think they're kidding about that. And I think even though they...
Before we hear anything from them about it?
Well, I think we'll get glimpses of things, mm-hmm. but... you know, despite their saying, we got our marching orders from Congress, you know, it's clear Congress wants there to be a pathway for CBD to market as a dietary supplement and a food, you know, and we're on it. they maybe, I feel like there's maybe some lip service there, and that it is going to take them some years. So, of course, in the report language for the Senate version of the appropriations bill, which hasn't yet been heard by the Senate, although it has passed through the Senate Ag Appropriations Committee. But here's the problem. It's in the report language and not the bill language. Senator McConnell directed for the FDA to come down with an enforcement discretion. Now, that would help us. That would give us some cover if it were a desirable enforcement discretion. We'll see what the outcome of that is. I mean, it would be really nice if it was in bill language directing the FDA to come up with a regulatory framework in a certain amount of time, like 12 months. That would be really great. But enforcement discretion would give us some cover. If I were a betting woman, particularly if they're going to do things quickly, I might predict that they may, and this is not desirable, I'm just predicting that it's
possible. We're throwing darts here, I get that.
Throwing darts, that they may say isolate is a drug.
I've heard some people theorize that too.
That isolate is a drug. This serving size and this potency is for dietary supplements. And ideally, we'd love for them to say, and this serving size is for food. But they're very not okay with food because with dietary supplements, there is implied, this is the amount you should take. With food, you know, there's no, it isn't there. So I might take, if I had a CBD brownie with 20 milligrams, what if I have, or a cookie, what if I eat 10 cookies? And I've been known to eat 20 cookies.
Right.
So, and that's a thing for the FDA. So
sure.
they may go for dietary supplements and hold off on food for a minute or a while and beverage. And I hope that's not true. There's a whole industries and there's some really excellent player putting out efficacious, high quality products in food and beverages. And I don't want to see those go away, but you know, that's definitely, they're skeptical. The FDA is skeptical there.
So it seems like there's going to be some pathway, but it may not be the one that we want, at least at first.
It will not be desirable. In fact, you know, got to keep our expectations realistic. It's probably not going to be all that we want. I did notice that the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance just submitted their requests regarding these issues to Canada, Health Canada, and they asked for 600 milligrams a day for dietary supplements and 60 milligram serving sizes for food.
That's fabulous. That would be plenty, right?
It's true. We think because there's some data out there that suggests 220, you know, the FDA, again, that's different than Canada, might be looking at something like that, something a little different.
Does that mean we'd probably, some of the high potency supplements that we have now would probably have to go away? Is that part of that? Like,
I mean, I sure hope it doesn't.
Sure.
Again, also because for the consumer, I take a lot of CBD every day.
Same.
I can't keep buying, you know, bunches and bunches of
bottles. 250 milligram bottles. Yeah.
So I sure hope that isn't the case. It will all remain to be seen. And of course, we need the FDA to use its authority to allow the marketing of dietary supplements and food as CBD to be marketed that way and say, you know, we're going to use our discretion and our authority to basically ignore the IND preclusion, which is what, are you familiar with the IND?
Mm-mm.
That's the whole reason why the FDA has been saying it is a violation of federal law to market CBD as a dietary supplement or a food. They've been saying it for 4 years.
Was that the international guidelines?
No, I'll tell you what the IND is in a sec. So over and over, they've been saying it, and they've been saying it on their website for 4 years, and all the industry leaders have known it. But when Gottlieb said it on 1220, all of a sudden state departments of ag and state departments and city departments of health were like hearing it for the first fucking time. But no, the IND preclusion, that is the acronym for investigational new drug. And it is section 201FF3B in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And it's in layman's terms, or to really summarize it, it's a mechanical function of the statute that says, basically, if a compound has not been marketed as a dietary supplement or a food prior to it being applied to be an IND, an investigational new drug, that same compound cannot be marketed as a dietary supplement or food. Like, it's a statutory function that triggers it. And so we don't have evidence, because people didn't want to put cannabidiol on the label, that even though there were products containing CBD prior to these dates and prior to DSHEA, which is the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, people didn't put it on their label, and marketing means a certain thing. So people are like, but wait a second, Dr. Mishulam, you don't have this research. Research isn't marketing. Mm-hmm. It needed to be called out as an ingredient on the label, and we have scoured the biggest intellectual brains in cannabis globally, have scoured the globe for this evidence, and we cannot find it. Mm. So anyway, that's what the IND preclusion is. So that's they're like, hey, there was this IND. Epidiolex filed, an IND for, I'm sorry, GW filed an IND for Epidiolex, and that automatically triggered Section 201 of F3B. So now it can't be marketed as a dietary supplement or a food. But there are other parts in the statute that allow the FDA to ignore that. And they can use their authority and discretion to ignore that. And we want them and need them to do it. Because without them doing that, they're not going to come up with anything. They could technically say, we're unwilling to use our authority and our discretion. And then we probably would get into some litigation.
What about just like as far as the near future, as far as like what you're seeing in like CBD's place in our culture or society? Where do you see that going over the next year or so?
So I see more and more awareness for it. I see the folks that are not making safe and quality assured products getting pushed out. The people who are making high quality and safe products will hopefully begin to have more shelf space. There is no such thing. I mean, discovering our endocannabinoid system in our lifetime is like discovering that the world is round and not flat. And so it's only the demand for these products, for safe and quality assured products, is going to increase. And that's what I see. And that people are going to increase their general wellness. And they're going to they're going to start to live more vibrant lives. And that's what I see. I also see more products that will include other primary cannabinoids. Mm. I think we're going to start to see a lot more either dominant or added CBG, CBN, these types of things. I think we're also going to see more specialized formulations to target certain temporary symptoms. I mean, I try not to make claims. We don't say anxiety, say nervousness. We don't say insomnia, we say temporary sleeplessness.
Sleeplessness, right.
So, but I think we're going to see more of those types of formulations.
Like a stress blend, for example.
Yes, although stress is a toughie, too.
Oh, that's a medical sounding word.
Nervousness is about as safe as you can get, right? Temporary mood swings, something like that. But what you can say and what you can't say is quite a thing with dietary supplements.
Oh, we do work with a smaller brand I think is really funny. Their loophole is that they're for the Sunday scaries, like your Sunday morning anxiety, but they're not using the word anxiety. They're just using this like hip millennial.
Sunday morning scaries.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So their brand is just called Sunday Scaries.
Which sounds temporary if it's just on Sunday.
It's just Sunday.
Right on.
So it sounds like part of what you're saying is moving away from like the hype that we're seeing, but also like educating people to understand that like this is a essential part of human, that the endocannabinoid system is a core part of our balance and our happiness.
Yes, the endocannabinoid system regulates homeostasis. Homeostasis is, can you imagine the complex system under this, our skin?
It's amazing.
The complexity of that, and it has to behave this, I have to breathe no matter whether I'm under tremendous stress, no matter if I'm in 107 degree weather or if I'm in negative 20. So my insides have to still behave the same even though all of these other external forces are changing. Yes. And some of my internal forces are changing too, but everything else still has to act right. That's homeostasis. When we discovered that the endocannabinoid system regulates homeostasis, it's the whole internal temperature, it's the whole internal control system for all of these other systems in our body. This is a revolution. This is like discovering that the world is round and it's not going anywhere. And again, it's only going to increase. So it's about putting blinders on, fighting for quality assured and safe products, fighting for common sense regulation that is going to assure this quality and safety, and educating the public. And yes, there's all kind of drama here, there, and everywhere. and there is with any revolution, but certainly with one such as this. And we're going to see plenty of that excitement, but it's not going to keep reality and wonderful quality assured products from marching themselves down the field and getting into people's bodies and improving their lives all around the world.
Yeah, that's good news, yeah.
Thank you so much to Joy for taking the time to talk to Kit and letting us use it on this show. And she brings up a really cool point about the endocannabinoid system that we know is in our body, okay? This is not something that industry insiders are using to make a quick buck. This is real science. And the most important thing that CBD can do for a user is create a homeostasis. Not necessarily cure a bunch of illnesses. This isn't a miracle drug, but maintaining a homeostasis is so important to staying healthy, both mentally and physically. Dialing back your anxiety levels, maintaining healthy sleep patterns, and even managing pain. These are three little things you can do to keep your body healthy. CBD is not here to cure all your ailments, and anyone who says it is lying. But there is real evidence that it does help mitigate the effects of pain, stress, and anxiety. And like Joy said, there's more and more evidence that shows CBD could and possibly should be part of our daily health regimen. It seems like the next major hurdle now is getting the USDA and the FDA to understand that too. Next time on the show, we are going to be talking about minorities in the hemp business and why there's so few of them. I had a great interview with the founders of Nothing But Hemp, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Speaking of you guys, I want to hear from you. Call me, 402-819-6417 with your hemp questions. And Kit, who you heard on this show, and myself will answer them right here on the show. It's been a while since we've done a Q&A. But I've got a bunch of good questions right now, so we'll probably do one real soon here. You can also email your questions to matt@ministryofhemp.com. Shoot them to us on Twitter, @ministryofhemp, or on Facebook, /ministryofhemp. Over at ministryofhemp.com, we have got a fantastic recipe for CBD-infused cocoa. The holidays are here, and they can be a little stressful for some of us. Why not take the edge off with a little CBD in your hot chocolate? A little bourbon doesn't hurt either. Take it from me. If you're looking for high quality and reliable CBD products, you can always check our top brands section at ministryofhemp.com. And if you have trouble affording some of this stuff, because it is expensive, we have links to several different CBD assistance programs that you could qualify for. The Ministry of Hemp podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, so you are doing me a personal favor when you go to iTunes and give us a star rating or write us a review, and it also helps to put this information in front of people that are looking for it. You wouldn't believe how helpful it is, and thank you to everybody that has so far. Once again, this is Matt Baum saying take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will ya? This is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, signing off.